acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, flowery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 61, Warping and Weeping. Sunday, November 23rd, 2014. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from Yin Hu Cha Yuan, Silver Lake Tea House. Show notes for this episode can be found on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. Today's episode features the following segments: The Back Porch, Chin Wagon, The Front Porch, A Little Bit of Learning, and Double Happiness. The Back Porch. This week I have completed the spinning of Aubergine colorway fiber from Patrizia of BZB Fibers. This is a 100% Polworth fiber, and I spun it as a two-ply on my Louette wheel. I plied it to preserve the gradient color changes, and ended up with about 431 yards. Polworth can be a little bit sticky and difficult to draft. I didn't find that it was difficult to draft, but I definitely did experience that the fiber felt sticky and wanted to grip onto itself as I spun. The other side of that is that the yarn is very plump and squishy and springy. So I think the yardage may have shrunk a little bit after washing. This yarn is incredibly plush and soft. It's between a fingering and a sport weight. I'm not an incredibly consistent spinner, and I actually enjoy seeing yarn knit up that isn't incredibly consistent in its weight, I suppose. One thing I noticed is that a little bit of silk added to fiber content makes it spin more consistently. So I think that my more consistent yarns have been ones where there's a little bit of silk content. And the more inconsistent or rustic looking yarns are 100% wool fiber. The other project I completed this week is my MPG, or multi-purpose garment, patterned by Emily Estrada. This is a convertible cowl kind of accessory, and I knit it with some hand spun, also from BZB Fibers. And this was a BFL, or Blue-Faced Lester, silk blend in the papaya colorway. Gorgeous, gorgeous pinks and greens. I used all of the yarn I had. I think it was about 360 yards or so. And this will become a gift for someone around the holidays. So it feels good to be done with that and have another gift for the gift box. Speaking of the holidays and gift giving, today's Chin Wagon segment will reveal a giant frustration that I endured over the past week. I can't call it bitten by my knitting because it was not knitting related, but it was definitely something that brought me near tears. And I thought Since I've recovered and I can laugh a little bit about it now, maybe it will bring you amusement as well. I mentioned in the episode I recorded after visiting Rhinebeck and the New York Sheep and Wool Festival that I had made a purchase of some yarn from Dragonfly Fibers. And when I purchased this yarn, I had Samuel in mind. I still can't remember the name of the base. It's a sock yarn, and the base has merino cashmere and nylon in it. I purchased the Rocky Top colorway, gorgeous browns, blues, and grays. And I thought this would make a really handsome woven scarf for Samuel. I have a rigid heddle loom. The brand is Becca. It's quite a primitive version of a loom. And it definitely, there was a learning curve in understanding how to warp it and how to keep everything straight. But I've been very pleased with the weaving projects I have completed on that loom so far. And I know that warping takes me a long time and it's an investment. But after that, the weaving of the project is very quick and simple, and I thought it wouldn't take me much time at all to weave a scarf for Samuel. And besides, men's scarves tend to be shorter than women's scarves, and I could think about what I wanted to do with the fringe. I have always warped the loom on my back porch, and I use one of our lantern stands as a warping peg. And there's this, you know, a whole production that I do that works very well. But I've never tried to start warping a loom at around 2:30 in the afternoon on a very, very cold November day. I have good cold tolerance, so I thought, it won't be that bad. I'll get this done. It'll take me about 2 hours to warp this loom. I have good light out here, and this is the way I'm used to doing it. I'll even take photographs as I go to document this process. And I got all of my supplies together and started to warp the loom. And it was cold, but it was sunny and cold, and things were going pretty well. But it started to get dark, and it got dark so quickly, and it got even colder so quickly. My fingers were working very slowly because they were cold. I was having trouble seeing, and I thought, well, I'll just put on some fingerless mitts. That will help keep my hands a little warmer so I can finish this warping job and go inside. Well, I think it might have been a factor of having fingerless mitts on, because I think some of the yarn was snagging on the mitts as I was warping it. In particular, once I had cut the warp and then I was re-threading the ends back through the reed, I think I was pulling on some of the yarn and actually creating an unevenness in the length of the warp. Because when I rolled back the warp to tie it on to the other end, I had some extreme differences in the length of my warp yarn. And of course, it was dark, so I wasn't looking at it carefully enough as I was rolling back the warp, and I rolled too far. I rolled to the point where some of the warp threads weren't long enough. They totally ran out of the reeds through which I had just threaded them. So then my thought was, well, I can just unroll it a little bit and unroll this warp until the point where I have enough yarn. Hopefully that will make the scarf long enough, or I can do less of a fringe. you know, I can sort of regroup. Well, I should not have tried to roll back the warp because some of the yarn unrolled, some didn't. I had the most amazing mess of yarn I have ever seen. I tend not to panic. I tend not to have huge knots and problems with my yarn because I try to be very calm. I think it's Rebecca Ringquist says, you know, the yarn knows when you're panicking. So just stop and breathe and calm down and your yarn will be well behaved. Well, it didn't work. And it was too cold and too dark for me really to calm down. I think by that time I was just, my shoulders were a big knot of stress and cold. And I couldn't make it work. It was just a giant mess. So I cut the yarn off of the loom and tried to suppress tears as I threw it away. Because of the amazing put out of this skein of yarn, I did not use it all to warp the loom. And so I still do have, I don't know, maybe 75 yards or so left. It's beautiful yarn. It really physically hurt me to cut it off the loom, but I couldn't fix it. It was just too far gone because I had made not one mistake, but probably a series of mistakes, and I wouldn't really be able to go back and fix it. So I still needed to think of something for Samuel because I like to make him something for Christmas, and I didn't really want to start over with the loom because, for one thing, it would be even colder if I tried to do this again. I would have to order the yarn or find comparable yarn. I don't know. I think it was just a message that the loom was trying to send me that I need to wait until summer for another weaving project, or at least until warm porch weaving weather before I start another weaving project. So with weaving off the list of possibilities, I started to think about something I could knit for Samuel for Christmas. I do like to give him a handmade gift every Christmas. And I looked through my stash at yarn that I have set aside for projects for him. And I kept coming back to this beautiful little skein of 100% cashmere yarn that I purchased from the sisters who raise cashmere goats as part of their mission near Troy, New York. And I purchased 180 yards at the Southern Adirondack Fiber Festival this fall. It's beautifully soft black cashmere yarn, but it's not enough to make any one thing. It's almost a lace weight. And I started thinking about what I could do with it. I thought it would make a great lining for a hat. So I searched around on Ravelry, and the pattern that I decided on was a lined beanie designed by Heather Kinney. And Heather is the proprietor of Highland Handmaids and the host of Fiberista Files videocast. This is the perfect hat for Samuel, I think, because what you do is you knit a ribbed edge, and then I used up all of the cashmere I had. I held it double while I did the knitting and used size US 5 needles and made a lining that's about 4.5 inches deep with about an inch of ribbing on the edge. And then you purl around, and then I started knitting with some of the leftover alpaca yarn from Strawberry Fields Farm. This is yarn, it's two colors, gray and black, that I used to knit the convertible cowl by Stephen West that I made for Samuel last year. So I thought this would make kind of a nice set, because though the cowl turns into a hat, Samuel never wears it as a hat. He always wears that piece as a cowl. And I thought this, with a cashmere lining and some stripes of gray and black, would make a really nice set if you wore them together. The knitting of this is going pretty well, and it's starting to get large enough that I could try it on and make sure it isn't too loose or too tight. And I think this is easily doable by the end of the month, maybe even Thanksgiving. I'll have this hat complete, and it will make a great gift. Also on the front porch, I have begun a new spinning project since taking the BZB fibers off my wheel. And I have a braid of fiber that I purchased when I was at the Super Summer Knit Together this summer. And I actually didn't purchase it at the vendor market. But on Friday night before the market, Meg had her yarn bus from House of Yarn in Nashville parked at the local farmer's market. And I went over there with my friend Mary Beth out of this world. We had some great hot chicken, we sampled local beer, and I shopped on the yarn bus. I purchased a braid of yarn from Daily Fibers, and the information on the band said that it was dyed, hand-painted by Jan Quarles, and I believe she's relatively local to Nashville. It's a merino bamboo blend, and the color is Q Soft Fall Gradient. This starts with beautiful, beautiful, beautiful silvery gray, and then it moves into some sky blue and finishes with a golden yellow. It's very, very pretty. I split this braid in half lengthwise, and over the winter, I will slowly be spinning it on my Turkish drop spindle from Jenkins. I love this spindle. It spins so well. It's such a beautiful tactile experience. And I try to spin a little bit every day with a kind of meditative spindling technique. I look forward to completing that and then probably using my wheel to ply that yarn together. But this will be a long-term project and will take a little while. A little bit of learning. As promised, I'd like to talk a little bit about types of flour and choosing flour for different things that you may want to make in your kitchen. This month, we are exploring flour for the Bulk Bins Cook Along and doing a lot of baking and cooking with flour. In thinking about flour, there are four main considerations, I think, in choosing a flour. We need to think about the type of wheat, when the wheat was grown, the soil and climate conditions, and also how the wheat is ground into flour. What is the process, or what is the coarseness or fineness of the ground flour? Perhaps the most widely used flour is all-purpose flour. It is a blend of hard and soft wheats. And that means it's also a blend of two different levels of protein or gluten in the wheat. All-purpose flour, averages between 8 and 11% protein. It can come in a bleached or an unbleached form. And unbleached can be a little more coarse. And as my mom mentioned in her talking about making pie crusts with all-purpose flour, it's her opinion that the unbleached flour can be a little more difficult to handle with a pastry crust. And so she prefers a bleached flour for that application. For almost anything else, like breads, biscuits, those kinds of things, the preference is for unbleached flour. Another type of flour that you may find in your pantry is bread flour. And this is from harder wheats and has a higher protein content, usually 12 to 14%. And that's what you need in order to activate the glutens and to have that spongy texture that we like in a bread. In terms of hard wheat, often the hard spring wheat will have a higher protein content than the winter wheat. Yet another kind of flour is cake flour, which has a protein content between 8 and 10%. It's also usually very finely textured, and the flour is chlorinated, which results in it being slightly acidic. And the application for that is that in the cake batter, liquids are distributed much more evenly when the flour is slightly acidic. If you would like to create a cake flour and you don't have any, you can substitute all-purpose flour, but remove 2 tablespoons per cup so that you have all-purpose flour, but you have less of it. And that will mimic the properties of cake flour at least a little bit. It's a decent substitution. Finally, there is pastry flour with a 9 to 10% protein. And this is great for all kinds of pastry applications. If you don't have it, you can substitute a 2-to-1 ratio of all-purpose flour and cake flour. Whole wheat flour is distinctive in that it's made from the whole kernel of the wheat instead of just the interior of the wheat. So the bran and the germ are also ground to make whole wheat flour. And this typically means it has a darker color and a bit of a coarser texture as well. In terms of wheat production in the United States, it may interest you to know that 40% of wheat grown in the U.S. is hard red winter wheat. And this is the primary ingredient in all-purpose flour. Hard spring wheat, which is used to make bread flour and other higher protein or designer flours, is about 25% of the wheat grown in the U.S. Soft wheat, which has more carbohydrates and less protein, is grown primarily east of the Mississippi and in the South. This is the ingredient for cake and pastry flours and is about 25% of the wheat produced in the U.S. And finally, durum wheat, which is the hardest variety of wheat we grow in the United States, it's about 3% of U.S. wheat production is in durum wheat. This is almost exclusively grown in North Dakota. It has a very high gluten, high protein content, and a rich amber color. Durum wheat can be anywhere up to 17% protein. So that's just a little bit about wheat and flour, especially products grown in the United States. I'm curious about your flour purchases. Do you purchase from the bulk bins in your local supermarket or health food store? Do you buy packaged flour in the baking section of your grocery store? How do you get your flour? What kind do you use? What kinds of things do you tend to keep on hand? And how do you store it? I tend not to worry too much about flour storage because I don't buy very much at a time, even though I do like to buy from the bulk bins. I don't buy very much at a time, and so I tend to use it before I would have to worry about it going rancid or anything like that. Sometimes in the summer, if I have a lot of flour with a high oil or high protein content on hand, I will put that in storage bags and put it in the freezer, just so that it doesn't spoil in the hot weather. But usually I'm using things like that up more quickly than they would be able to spoil. So you can post your comments, your questions, your input and suggestions on the Ravelry thread. There's a November thread for flour for the bulk bins cook along. And you can also hashtag any photographs, hashtag bulk bins CAL. At the end of every month, I choose a randomly selected winner for a pattern prize. So join in. Double happiness. I would like to thank everyone who has reached out to me with compliments about my first pattern design, Another Door Opens. Folks have been purchasing the pattern on Ravelry, have been favoriting the pattern, have written some lovely comments, and also given Mary Beth some praise for her beautiful knitting. So I'd like to thank everyone for that. It feels so good to be part of a community that is ready with praise and with compliments. And that has made this an extraordinary week. In listening to Joanna Spring's recent video podcast episode of Knit Spin Farm, I have decided to join her and take a bit of a digital detox over the week, including Thanksgiving. This means that I will take a break from social media, that I will really limit my screen time to things that need to be done professionally, and to use my leisure time for other things, reading, listening to music, enjoying nature. Of course, there will be a lot of kitchen prep to do in time for Thanksgiving celebration here in the U.S. And there are just other things that I need to attend to. So I will be not so present on social media over the course of the next week. One thing I do hope to post is a recipe for gnocchi. That will be my final experiment and post using flour in the month of November. And I've been toying with the idea of potato gnocchi versus maybe some butternut squash or pumpkin gnocchi. And I would like to develop my own recipe for that and share that and some photographs with you. So I hope to put that up sometime this week as kind of a Thanksgiving gift to all of the listeners and bulk bins cook-alongers out there. Otherwise, I'll be pretty scarce on the internet and on social media. I would like to wish everyone a very happy week, and if you're celebrating Thanksgiving, a very peaceful Thanksgiving filled with friends and family and really delicious food. I'd like to share a poem with you. This is titled Butter. I think butter is the essential ingredient of Thanksgiving. We talk about the turkey and sweet potatoes and all, and stuffing and all of that, but I think butter just heightens the flavor and the quality of everything at this time of year. Elizabeth Alexander is a Harlem-born poet. She grew up in Washington, D.C., and she is notable because she delivered a poem at Barack Obama's inauguration. It's called Praise Song for the Day, and it was afterwards published. I think she is currently the chair of African American Studies at Yale University, but she's pretty high profile, so she may have moved on to some other position by this time. I have heard her read this poem, and I will link in the show notes for this episode to the Poetry Foundation website where there's a recording of her reading the poem. Butter. My mother loves butter more than I do, more than anyone. She pulls chunks off the stick and eats it plain, explaining, cream spun around into butter. Growing up, we ate turkey cutlets sautéed in lemon and butter. Butter and cheese on green noodles. Butter melting in small pools in the hearts of Yorkshire puddings. Butter, better than gravy, staining white rice yellow. Butter glazing corn in slipping squares. Butter, the lava in white volcanoes of hominy grits. Butter softening in a white bowl to be creamed with white sugar. Butter disappearing into whipped sweet potatoes with pineapple. Butter melted and curdy to pour over pancakes. Butter licked off the plate with warm alaga syrup. When I picture the good old days, I am grinning greasy with my brother, having watched the tiger chase his tail and turn to butter. We are Mumbo and Jumbo's children, despite historical revision, despite our parents' efforts, glowing from the inside out, 100 megawatts of butter.
Acorns are jobbing off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. Music for this episode is Sweet. Music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Chris DeLong and Cesar Diaz. If you like today's episode, I hope you will consider liking the show's Facebook page or leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire. Just like Linda Curtis, but out on a wire. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Nature's ever get you high till your face is smile. Jump a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.